It is Tim and Emma with you this afternoon, and right now we head over to Washington where we find Simon Marks. Hello, Simon. How are you?
I'm good, Emma. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, Donald Trump, we've had a look at him, what he's been up to, his first 100 days in office. What have his second 100 days got in store, do you think?
I'm so excited. We're into the second 100 days. We made it through the first 100 and the world still seems to be here. He's got an enormous amount of work to do because he ended that first 100 days. And, you know, to be fair to Donald Trump, he has made good on some of the pledges that he made when he ran for office. He's cut back federal government regulations that he says are getting in the way of business being able to do its thing here. He has put new restrictions on the ability of government workers to leave the government and immediately go off and join lobbying efforts for industry and so on. But in a whole variety of different areas, he's got unfinished business. Now, it's only been 102 days now, so inevitably he would have unfinished business, but it's not just unfinished business, it's problematic business. We have no idea, for example, what he's going to do about repealing and reforming Obamacare, a central plank of his policy platform that got dismembered just a few weeks ago because he couldn't get Republicans in Congress to go along with his plan. He has had to withdraw a request for federal funding in this budgetary cycle to build that wall along the U.S. border with Mexico. So very unclear how the money is going to be raised to get that project going. He's failed to make good on his promise to close America's borders in the last attempt to citizens from six predominantly Muslim populated countries. So in a whole raft of areas, he has got a lot of work ahead of him in order to satisfy the people who sent him to Washington in the first place. And now there are various other sort of gadflies flitting around the administration, including the possibility of a military strike on North Korea, which Donald Trump is absolutely not ruling out, even though over the weekend he described Kim Jong-un as a pretty smart cookie in an interview with CBS here, and he and his national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, say diplomacy remains the preferred way of dealing with North Korea. But very difficult to see how you do that, given that Kim Jong-un is very determined to carry on developing his nuclear program, and also given the fact that if you're going to put a diplomatic effort into practice, you need diplomats to do that. And Donald Trump has still got hundreds of unfilled appointments at the State Department and thousands of unfilled appointments more broadly in the U.S. government. So all sorts of issues very firmly in his in-tray.
Let me ask you, Simon, about those unfilled appointments. This is something that is kind of flying under the radar for most people, I guess. And it is literally hundreds and thousands of positions to fill.
Yeah.
Not a priority for the new president.
Well, I mean, I think it would be a priority if he had people knocking down the door to serve in his administration. From day one, that's been a problem because there are many people who, during the election campaign, on the Republican side of the aisle, signed pledges saying they would never, ever work with him or for him. If you take a look at what it means in practical terms, you've got entire senior levels of the State Department that simply no longer exist. When Donald Trump jetted down to Mar-a-Lago, what he refers to as the Southern White House, his estate down in West Palm Beach, for that summit meeting with President Xi Jinping of China a few weeks ago, there was no Asia team from the State Department there offering backup, advice, shepherding his way through the meetings. I mean, he was doing that alongside Vice President Mike Pence, the Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, and Defense Secretary James Mattis. I mean, there are substantial holes now in this administration. Every day, those of us who cover the Trump administration get an email from the White House detailing the key appointments that the White House says he's unveiling for that particular day. But, you know, there's a handful of people get appointed every week, and they have thousands of positions to fill. Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, conceded that he thinks it will be the back end of next year before the State Department comes close to being fully staffed, he would argue, adequately staffed, others would argue. Of course, the Trump administration says, look, this is an example of our probity. It shows that we're running the government in a very cost-effective way. We're not pouring money away on salaries and benefits. But policy experts here say if you don't fill those positions, it's going to be very difficult for you to make progress in a whole variety of different areas where you need rock-solid and often competing policy advice.
And moving on, there is let's talk about libel laws. He wants to change libel laws. Is he going to be able to, or is he going to be blocked at this as well?
Well, he's been saying this for months. He said it during the presidential campaign. Indeed, he claimed even before he was a presidential candidate that if only America's libel laws more closely mirrored Britain's, he would have been able to bring all sorts of actions against people that he argues have said nasty things about him publicly. It is now apparent that at Donald Trump's urging, senior White House staff have indeed looked at the possibility of changing the country's libel laws, an effort that appears to have been led by White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus. And Donald Trump, of course, has come up against exactly what we all knew he was going to come up against, and that's this pesky thing called the First Amendment to America's Constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech. So this is not a situation analogous to Britain. It will be very difficult then for them to tighten the libel laws the way Donald Trump would like. And honestly, that's probably good news for Donald Trump, because there is an argument that says if there were libel laws here similar to Britain's, Donald Trump would be on the receiving end of as many libel lawsuits as those that he might be filing against people that he says have said nasty things about him.
I was going to make a suggestion there that sometimes you have to be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
Next thing on the list of topics that I know you're talking about today, Joe Biden's not going to be in around in 2020. No kicking Joe Biden around.
No, I mean, very bizarre sort of 36 hours of news here, because we learned over the weekend that his senior staff had apparently been gathering information and putting together a strategic timeline lest Joe Biden, the recently departed vice president of the United States, of course, decided that in 2020 he was going to make a presidential run. I have to say my eyebrows were raised at that, given that Joe Biden's best chance of securing the White House would have been last year, when, of course, he decided not to run for the presidency. And by 2020, he will be 77 years of age, which is certainly at the outer limits, I would suggest, of the age at which you can probably reasonably be expected to mount a presidential campaign. Well, he has come out publicly here within the last few hours and nixed the whole thing. He sent a message to members of his staff and said, knock it off, guys. I'm not going to be running for the presidency in 2020. So any dreams that Democrats out there may have had of Joe Biden perhaps riding to the rescue have once again been dashed.
I'm disappointed at that. I like Joe Biden a lot. And finally, Tim, you've been chomping at the bit over this one. Avocado prices. Should we be investing in avocados?
Yes, I think you should definitely be. Are you a guacamole fan, Tim?
Do you know what? I don't get on with guacamole at all.
Do you
or
don't
avocados.
Get on with guacamole?
I don't.
You don't get on with avocados generally? You don't even like them halved with a bit of olive oil and balsamic vinegar? Nothing like that? Nice bit of wholemeal bread to mop it all up? No?
Clearly you do. I grew up with that in the 70s. That was my mum and dad's go-to. It was a bit of vinegar,
salt, pepper. It's healthy fat.
I know, yeah.
It's healthy fat. At least that's what my wife assures me. Well, I'm sure that people sitting in that Dubai traffic are now salivating and can't wait to get home to slice open an avocado and consume it for dinner or perhaps just as a snack. But anyone that wants to do that is going to have to prepare to dig deeper, because the price of avocados from Mexico, according to a Bloomberg survey, is now twice what it was last year. That's partly due to not enough rain in Mexico. It's also mostly due to industrial action in Mexico by farmers. And it may also be a little bit of prudent action by some of Mexico's avocado farmers, because they know that Donald Trump has threatened to slap an import tariff on avocados leaving the United States and leaving Mexico and heading to the United States, in order to use the money to build that border wall we were talking about between the United States and Mexico. Either way, if you're going to add guacamole to that tortilla, it's about to become a bit more expensive.
Stranger things have happened, Simon, than an avocado tax. It should be pointed out. This message brought to you by the Avocado Growers of Mexico today. Simon Marks in Washington. Do appreciate you coming on. Good to talk to you, Simon.
It goes very well with tequila, Tim.
We'll talk about that another time, Simon.